Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning. We interrupt your regularly scheduled Bears angst to bring you some lively baseball conversation. I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine. We are broadcasting live for the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Inside the Clubhouse, where we are each and every Saturday morning for 2 hours, 9 to 11, talking baseball, talking Cubs, talking White Sox, who still have the October playoff reckoning, however you want to look at it, Bruce. The playoffs are right around the corner. Sense of anticipation continues to grow. How you doing this morning, buddy?
Good morning, David. Yeah, it's an exciting time of year for White Sox and the White Sox fans. And for Cub fans, a different type of excitement watching some players that may or may not still be in the mix come spring training 2022. And anticipating youngsters like Brennan Davis possibly showing up as early as then. This is Inside the Clubhouse. As David said, we're here with you every week, 52 weeks out of the year. Yep, even during bear season, every Saturday from 9 to 11, talking baseball. We're here for you, and we enjoy the heck out of it every week. To get in, 312-644-6767. That's our number for the phone as well as text. And David, let's start off with the White Sox and whittling down their magic number to five. Count it five.
Yep. Five.
The earliest it can happen now is Monday.
Monday in Detroit, just like it was in 2005. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but they clinched there, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's that symmetry that you would like to maybe duplicate. And White Sox 8-0 winners in Texas last night against the Rangers. The Cubs lost 8-5 in Milwaukee. We will get to that eventually. But this is the month and the time of the month in September where the Sox start to look at that playoff roster and also the playoff viability, Bruce. This has been a season-long conversation, at least since the All-Star break. You know what? The Sox, since the All-Star break, 30-28, which is the definition of, I think, mediocrity. And yet you see why on nights like last night there is so much hope and optimism. Dylan Cease very strong, 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. Just how good is this White Sox team, Bruce? I'm sure you get asked that all the time. I'm sure you have an opinion that may vary from day to day. My thought on the White Sox is they are dangerous still, but I understand the concerns going into this time of the month.
You ask me who are the White Sox right now? TBD. That is what they are right now. And they're in good shape because they've gotten all their starting pitching back. They're starting to build with 2 weeks left some of that durability that they need in that starting pitching. Those arms have to be ready to go. Giolito looked pretty good, okay, not quite ready yet last time out. I think that Lance Lynn looked good coming off of the IL. Now you have a situation where you have to start thinking about, David, what is your rotation going into the playoffs? Who would be your number one starter? And I think if you ask five different people, uh-huh, you might get three different answers. You might get three different answers on who is your opening starter. David, I'm going to ask you right now.
Okay.
Playoffs start tomorrow. You're in Houston. Yep. Right now, that's how it's set up.
Yep.
You're going against the Astros. Who's your number one starter going in?
Right now, this is the way I'd be looking at it. Lance Lynn is my ace. Lance Lynn has earned the right to get the game one designation as to start the playoffs for the Chicago White Sox. Not because necessarily, you know, it's an award, but I think he gives you the best chance to get off to a 1-0 start in a playoff series, which in a 5-game series is huge. Lance Lynn number one, Bruce. Game two, I'm going to switch it up here. I'm going to go with Lucas Giolito. I don't know. And again, ask me next week and we'll talk about it again. But today I'm going to go with Giolito too, because Carlos Rodon, who we saw come back in a very encouraging outing, I think can give you one start. And if that one start is at home in game three, when you're coming back, either, you know, look at the options. You could be fighting for your life in the playoffs if you're down 2-0 or 0-2. You could be tied and wanting to get up that in pivotal game three, or you could be looking for the clinch. Carlos Rodon is like your game one starter de facto, but he can only give you one start per series, perhaps. So I'm going Lynn, Giolito, Rodon, and then Dylan Cease if necessary.
All right, so that's probably the way I would go, but I would question necessarily the switching between Giolito and Rodon. I like the idea that Rodon's been dominant at home. I like your thinking about the fact that he can only give you one start per series. My question is, what do you do with Keuchel? Okay, what do you do with him? Is he a long man in case one of those starters stumbles at the beginning? Do you go automatically to Keuchel after that? Or is he not on your first round? Is he not in the mix?
Well,
in the first
I think
round?
Because it's a five-game series, Bruce, don't you believe that they've got to consider – here's the rub, and I think the Cubs faced this with Jason Hamill a few years back. You're not to compare a Cy Young Award winner with Jason Hamill, but it's the same dynamic. Dallas Keuchel gives you that veteran savvy, that presence that you want in the playoffs, but he's not been real consistent. Now, if he finishes strong, Bruce, and he did have a pretty good outing the other night, I think if he builds on that, then maybe you look at him as that long man, because you might have a situation where, let's say, worst-case scenario, Giolito gets rocked, he leaves in the third. Who's going to mop up if you fall behind? Maybe Keuchel fills that role. Maybe you want him because you don't want to alienate him. So I think you consider his stature maybe more so than you would a guy like Ronaldo Lopez or somebody else who might be on the playoff roster fence. So right now, again, it's start to start. And as Guillen said, you're going to wait till the last minute to make this decision. I'd be leaning in favor of keeping Keuchel on the playoff roster.
Right. It's a left-hander. It's a different look. There were some hopeful things that you saw in his last start, but it's been really a rough ride for him over the past. The whole season has not been right for Dallas Keuchel. It just hasn't been there, and he's still getting ground balls. He's still getting a little bit of what you want from him, being a sinker slider pitcher. But the hard hit rate is way up there, and
right.
Balls are flying through the infield. It's a little different. I'm not putting this all on Dallas Keuchel, but he's certainly at the very best your fourth starter, and then if you're in game five, it's all hands on deck anyway, when it comes to that situation.
But let me ask you this, Bruce. We have now talked about the starting pitchers and how the rotation would go in the playoffs against the Astros, and yet we have not mentioned Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease last night, again, got out of a shaky first, didn't give up a run, too many pitches in the first inning, strikes out 10 in five innings. This is a swing and miss guy. This is a guy that now has 212 strikeouts, third best in the American League. Why are we not considering him for maybe a spot? I don't think he's one of your first three starters, but doesn't he get game four if there's a game four?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you can make a case that he's the most dominant pitcher on the White Sox right now. Even
right.
though the walks are there, I think it's eight games this year with 10 or more strikeouts. I mean, he has been extremely hard to hit, very dominant. The walks and the foul balls. Like last night's game, 92 pitches in five innings, they weren't going to go six with him at this point. They're saving bullets in the pitcher's arms. But you can make a case for him being the most dominant pitcher on the White Sox when it comes to swing and miss right now, which is really what you want when you go into the playoffs.
It's a nice problem to have, especially when you have a guy like Cease that has now progressed to the point where, you know, he's 12-7. I know the record doesn't mean everything, but he has put himself in a position to be trusted. It is late September. It is a time of the year where you had hoped he would get to the point where he has gotten. So that's a nice problem to have when you're kind of putting your pitching staff together. Bruce, I also wonder about the back end of the roster position player-wise. And you got guys who you wonder how they fit, if they fit. You know, Gavin Sheets, Brian Goodwin, and we have Adam Engel perhaps coming back. What about Romy Gonzalez? Tell me this. Is it crazy to wonder if he has a spot on the playoff roster? He had three hits last night, first time he's done that in the majors. Nobody expected this guy to be contributing, and yet Ozzie Guillen again. Whoever's the hottest at the end of September may get the nod. Is it possible that you could keep this guy on the roster just because he finishes strong?
Well, David, when in Romy, do what the Rome. I would have to say,
give me two weeks.
All right? I'm not saying no to anything at this point because I like the hot hitter at the end. You know, he has no real resume at the major league level, and he was a hot hitter in the minor leagues at the end before he was called up. But, you know, you're going to – I think one way or another, Billy Hamilton is on the roster, okay? And why Billy Hamilton? Because I think in a short series, you need to have a speed guy to be able to implement at the end to try to win a game. If you need a pinch runner on first base – and you're the tying run, and it's the eighth or ninth inning, and you need a stolen base, or you need a guy to be able to score from first on a double, I think somehow, Hamilton ends up on the roster. Not necessarily because he's better than someone else that you might take, but he's a better fit for what you might need to do to try to win a game.
These are the kind of questions they will try to answer at the back end of the roster. But, Bruce, when you look at the heart of the batting order, when you look at the meat of the pitching rotation, does this White Sox team look to you, even though they have kind of struggled, relatively speaking, 30-28 since the All-Star break for a team this talented and deep, it constitutes a struggle. Does this look like a team that can beat the Astros in the first round and possibly win the American League pennant based on how they're playing or how they're capable of playing?
Yes, if you kidnap Bregman and Altuve, I think there's a... No, seriously, yeah, why not? I mean,
yeah,
I agree with you. The White Sox have not played their best baseball, but they've also been in protect mode over the last couple of weeks, and some of their best pitchers, you know, that record could be a lot better if their pitchers weren't shut down for protection. You know, all three of their top starters were shut down for protection reasons. And all three said, maybe not Rodon because a shoulder issue you have to pay real attention to. But with the Keuchel knee the Lynn knee and the Giolito hamstring, both said and the team said they probably would pitch through it if it was the playoffs or trying to get into the playoffs. So their record, I throw that record out the window totally.
I'm looking okay, at... Okay, I just did that.
It's gone. That. It's gone. Yeah. Because it's about how strong your starting pitchers are, how strong your bullpen is, and the full strength of your roster when you get in 2 weeks from now. So the White Sox have been in, had the luxury of resting people and doing the proper thing with them on the IL to get to this point. Now, there is that situation where they lost, I think, two out of the last three series, maybe three out of four. And you don't want to get into that mode of not feeling good about where you're at and not winning baseball games. I agree with that. You want to see them starting to build off of this next series here against the lesser teams like Texas. You want to see them sweep here against Texas. You want to see them, you know, probably sweep or win two out of three against Detroit. That's your goal right now, is to start building some momentum.
you want Tony La Russa to say after games ahead in the next 2 weeks that they were a pleasure to watch, as he said yesterday after beating the Rangers 8-0. The White Sox are deep, they're dangerous, and I still think they will be able to hit reset once the playoffs begin. What do you think? 312-644-6767. The score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's go to Don in Burr Ridge. Don, good morning. Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
You guys were talking a little bit about Dallas Keuchel and experience. One of the things that I think experience is overrated, you can sit there and look at Clayton Kershaw, who's a Hall of Fame pitcher. He's had experience in the playoffs, and he's been average at best more times than poor. Talent, in my opinion, even though if a guy is a rookie like Cease, you find out what he does. He's got much better talent. So you got to go with Cease over Keuchel. I don't even know if I'd have Keuchel on the playoff roster, maybe for an extra pitcher. As Bruce was sitting there talking about the team resting guys, I think it's very, very smart to rest the pitchers and the players to get them healthy. I think the two best teams set up for the playoffs, in my opinion, are the White Sox because they're starting pitching and their relief pitching is sickening great when healthy. Another team is Toronto. I think those are going to be the top two teams potential for the World Series. Just my thoughts.
Thanks, Don. Good phone call. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, Toronto's got to get in, and they have been the hot team, and they've been the exciting team in baseball with Vlad Guerrero Jr. leading the way, and we were going to talk a little bit about him and his chances of winning the MVP. We might do that a little bit later in the show, but I agree. I mean, you know, but it's not as simple as just resting, David, as we talked about. Getting people to be at prime form when you go into the playoffs, not being built up to just 4 innings or 5 innings, but starting to, push it a little bit. So that's the thing that you question. So if La Russa starts putting the rotation guys in and getting 100, 105 pitches out of them again and going into the sixth or seventh inning, will people say, hey, what are we trying to prove here? Or are you getting them playoff ready? And that is the quandary for them.
He's Bruce Levine. I'm David Hall. We've got a great show for you this morning on Inside the Clubhouse. Elise Menneker coming up at 9:40. James Fegan from The Athletic at 10 o'clock. We've got chin music. We've got conversation about the White Sox and the playoffs. And next, how did the Brewers get so good, and how did they make the gap so wide between them and the Cubs? Right here, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Hader to Contreras, 2-2. Swing and a miss, and the ball game is over. Hader gets the save. Milwaukee gets the win. 8-5, the final.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was the voice of Pat Hughes calling another Cubs loss to the Brewers. Now they are 3-14 against the Brew Crew, Bruce, this year. The Brewers, amazing, 95-57. They've got the biggest lead of any division leader, 12.5 over the St. Louis Cardinals, who are, by the way, in the wild card playoff hunt. And the Brewers continue to chug along. And, we talk so much about the Bears all week in town, and we see them tomorrow against the Bengals week two. Bears, Packers, Cubs, Brewers. I have to wonder, who's further away? The Bears to the Packers, or now the Cubs to the Brewers, Bruce? But from a baseball perspective, how in the world did the Brewers get this good this fast?
Well, it's all it starts with pitching, right? So they have two of the best starting pitchers and three of the best, 15 starting pitchers in the National League, and at the end of their bullpen, they have two of the best bullpen guys in the game. So it's not very difficult to see. If you look at the Chicago Cub formula from 2015 all the way through last year when they won the division in the 60-game season, it's always been about the starting pitching. It really always has. The bullpen, it was good enough in most of those years, and certainly going out and getting Chapman was the final nail that they needed to hammer down, the last championship rung. But David, it doesn't get very much more complicated than you need to have good pitching. Show me a playoff contender, and I will show you a pretty good pitching staff. And the best teams in the National League, what is it about the Giants and the Dodgers? It's all about their pitching and the depth of their pitching, and that's what the Brewers have as well. I don't think the Brewers get enough national attention because of that race in the National League West, David. It's been all year. All we've heard about is Dodgers, Giants, Padres, all the way through from the very beginning. All three have been very good teams. The Giants and Dodgers separated themselves from the Padres. Padres now fighting to even get into the playoffs, a wild card. But, David, the Brewers start with pitching, and then they work their way through. What did they do? Willie Adames comes in May in a big deal that you don't expect, right? And all of a sudden, he's the MVP of the Brewers the rest of the way until he got hurt 3 weeks ago or so. Then they go out and they get more. They add on again. So the formula is really good. And then you have, on top of it, a great executive in David Stearns running that team. And you have, I will argue, the best manager in baseball with their manager. There's no doubt in my mind.
There it is.
That he
is.
Yeah.
Bruce, the names do tend to change. And you look at the position, the everyday lineup for the Brewers is like, okay, yeah, you can see. They had Yelich, who was playing at an MVP level for several years, but that's dropped off. Braun is now, retired. And you look at some of those changes that they've been able to absorb and withstand and overcome because of the pitching, but also because of the way the pitching is handled. I mean, this takes a tactician who is a masterful tactician to be able to push the right buttons at the right time to get your bullpen functioning at a high level when it matters most. And that is Craig Counsell's, I think, one of his biggest gifts, is that he's able to do that while keeping his team playing with a sharpened edge.
His resume, if you look back at it, is off the chart. He initially was on two different championship teams and an integral part of those championship teams in Arizona and in Florida. Now it's called Miami. There was nothing sensational about Craig Counsell's career other than he was a winner, and teams that were competing wanted him to be a part of that team. Then he goes into the front office after he retires of the Milwaukee Brewers and works there for, I think, 3 or 4 years, just under, getting used to going to the minor leagues, going around and looking at development, going around and looking at scouting, going out and scouting himself, sitting in with Doug Melvin and Gord Ash, the guys that ran the team at the time, and sitting in on games and learning what that phase is all about. And then just the baseball IQ is off the chart. The Brewers have the luxury of the best manager in baseball who, as you said, David, handles that pitching as well as any manager in baseball right now.
And he's got a smart boss, David Stearns. He's got a really good bench coach in Pat Murphy, the former Notre Dame coach who spent some time in the Padres organization, good friend, and smart baseball guy. So they have that kind of sharpened edge. I guess the question we ask here in Chicago, Bruce, is absolutely the pitching is the answer, but how do the Cubs get to that point where they can be more competitive than they are in a season in which they've lost 3 of 17. They've lost 14 of 17 games against the Brewers. Is this something they can address by either buying pitching or continuing to try to develop Justin Steele, Keegan Thompson, Al Zelaya, these kinds of prospects, or is it a combination of both?
So the number one most important thing in the Cub organization now is the development of their players. But more importantly, as you just pointed out, are the development people the right people? Okay, you have to scout. You have to bring in good players. From all indications, they have had good drafts recently. They have good young players down there. Now we must see development, something that we haven't seen in the Cub organization over the last 9 years. Maybe going back further, it was difficult, but you know, you give the Cubs presently constituted as their front office some credit for the fact that they did develop Contreras, they did develop Baez, even though they were signed by the Jim Hendry group. So they did some development, but there's no pitching development. And you know, when we come back and talk in the second hour, after Elise comes on next, David, we can talk a little bit more about that, how the development people are just as important as the players are going to be able to develop here over the next 3 or 4 years.
Without a doubt, and that's why the Brewers are now a team that nobody should take lightly. Going into October, hey, the Dodgers are a great team. The Giants have had a terrific season. I'm not convinced right now that the Brewers aren't going to be the team that neither one of those teams wants to face, and they could end up being the surprise team and have a special year up in Milwaukee. The Bucks won the NBA title. Don't be shocked if the Brewers are entertaining those aspirations in the World Series. It's been that kind of year in Milwaukee. But, Bruce, we will talk to Elise Menaker next from the Marquee Sports Network. She knows what the Iowa Cubs look like. She knows what the Chicago Cubs trying to beat the Brewers looked like this weekend, and we will talk to her next here on Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Scoreless game, third inning, two down, bases empty, and the 0-2 to Adrian Hauser. Here it comes. Curve swung on and missed, strike three. Another strikeout for Davies.
You know, that's the best I've seen. I don't know that I've seen him that good in a long time. Just attacking the zone. It looked like he felt good with the fastball. Really came out. The changeup wasn't showing up near as much early on as I thought the fastball was. Felt good with the breaking ball as well. He was flipping that in there pretty. I just like how aggressive he was, not nibbling, coming right at him. You know, they hit some balls right at guys. When you're on the attack, you know, good things can happen. And I thought that's what he did early on, was really pounding the zone.
Welcome back inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm David Hall with Bruce Levine until 11 o'clock. That was Pat Hughes describing Zach Davies, and then you heard from David Ross talking about Davies' outing, who had started well, but the Cubs did not finish in losing Friday night's game again to the Brewers. It's time now to go to our guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, and that is where we find Marquee Sports Network's own, the pride of Cornell softball, a member of the school's Hall of Fame, Elise Menaker. Good morning, Elise. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, guys. Thank you.
Well, let's start with, we were talking about the gap between the Cubs and the Brewers, and you were on hand first for a firsthand look last night. And how would you describe how the Brewers got to this point and what it's like to see a team functioning as at a high level like the Brewers are right now?
Yeah, so even, you know, David Ross said it in being asked, because this is a team that could possibly clinch it against the Cubs this weekend. And it comes down to pitching for the Brewers. They obviously have a really solid rotation with a few all-stars. And, you know, when you want to go deep into the playoffs and you want to do some damage, you look always to pitching first. So I think that's really the first key for their team. And because they are in the hunt and looking to play for a lot more, you could just sense, I've been really impressed with the Cubs' fight and the way they battle at the end of games, but you could just sense, you know, the Brewers are playing for something different, and they were not going to give up against this team. And you can just tell that they're playing for a lot.
So, Elise, I think the hardest job for a reporter / entertainer is the job that you and Taylor do on Marquee. And the reason I say that, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it as well, is you have to kind of walk that tightrope between reporter and entertainer. You must do both. How difficult mm-hmm. is that, and how do you weigh that when you go into a day's work?
So basically what you describe is exactly how I see my job, but not in a negative way. I see myself as someone who is there to inform and entertain, because that's just part of my role. So when I describe it, you know, I've always said that you can have really good information, but if you don't have an entertaining way to deliver it, then no one's going to receive that message. And so I do see that entertainment part as part of it, because I think that's one of the keys as a journalist, to know your audience and how to capture that audience. So for me, it's kind of the fun part. And that's actually one of the reasons I love covering sports and baseball in particular, is I started my career as a news reporter, but I feel that in sports, you know, in news, I always miss smiling. Basically, a lot of the times you're telling serious stories. And so the entertainment factor is actually one of the pieces that I love about sports.
We're talking with Elise Menick, who does a terrific job for Marquee Sports Network, was in Milwaukee last night watching the Cubs. And Elise, you've also done a terrific job doing a lot of analyst work with the Iowa Cubs, doing those games and bringing them to the audience. And so you know and have the insight into what exactly we're looking at when we're talking about the prospects and everything about this Cubs season since July is the development. What do they have down there? Who's on the way? Who can help and how quickly?
Well, a lot of them are up with the Cubs right now. A lot of the players who I was, you know, calling games for, they are guys that you're currently watching on the Cubs. But actually, there's still a few, because even myself, in the last couple of games that I did, I wanted to be able to point out to people a few more prospects to keep an eye on. And a few that I pointed out, one was pitcher Brendan Little. One was infielder Jared Young, and then, of course, actually outfielder Greg Dykeman, who we got a glimpse of early on, or I should say, you know, middle of the season early on for him in the trade process. And so I think that there are still guys down there. And, of course, now who is there after my last game is Brennan Davis, one of baseball's top prospects, the Cubs' top prospects. Seems that he is transitioning very well with the iCubs, already a few home runs, and they're playing one of the best teams in the minor leagues, in the Omaha Storm Chasers. They have a few of baseball's top prospects as well, including Bobby Witt Jr., and right now they've won every game against them in this series, and I don't think that is a coincidence that Davis is up there, and I know Horner is also rehabbing, but I think you're seeing the impact of a guy like Davis and what he can add to a lineup. So I know that as much talent as we've seen get called up over this season, what I think is really exciting is there's constantly more names that you can see with Iowa and in the other Cubs organizations, like on the other teams that, like in their system, that you can point out, hey, you know, watch for this guy, watch for this guy, watch for that guy. So for me, it's an exciting time for the Cubs.
Elise Menick, on our show on Inside the Clubhouse today, I'm Bruce Levine. He is my good friend and co-host, David. And we are here for you again every Saturday, 52 weeks out of the year. And Elise, when you talk about gathering content for this year and the challenges as a reporter, there's, on any given day, there's 15 or 20 of us on the field, where it's the only place we can go to talk to players, coaches, and in some cases, the manager. What have you learned about reporting during COVID times? And what have been the challenges for you to get the content that you want?
Yeah, I think, and Bruce, maybe you'd agree that one of my favorite parts about this job is the interaction. It's the people, it's getting those stories. And so that's definitely changed over the course of the last couple of years. I will say this, that especially last year with the Zoom calls, you don't get the face-to-face interaction. And I think the content you're getting is definitely different because of that. Not that it's better or worse, it's just different. Because I think all of us would agree, as we've all done a lot of Zooms over the past couple of years, that when you don't have that person, you know, in-person contact, the interaction is just different. With that said, though, it provided us with an opportunity, I think, to get a lot of sound that maybe we otherwise couldn't if we weren't at the stadium. So I know for me last year, I was on almost every single Zoom call because I really liked just keeping up with the team and hearing what everyone had to say as a way to gather stories and to gather content. And then this year, it's kind of nice that we can supplement it more with the in-person conversations and just even getting little things that now you don't take for granted, being able to have quick side conversations like before the game, just really quickly being able to talk to Frank Schwindel about a couple of things where it's not really conversations that you feel like it's the type of questions that's so major that you would ask like on a Zoom call kind of thing, but it just helps you enhance your stories. So I think the biggest thing is the content at times may feel different or change, but the way in which you get it, and that may look different, but the job in essence stays the same, if that makes sense. I really just try to get stories and gather content in whatever way I can. It helps and it's the best in person, but you're forced, it's kind of like baseball. It's a game of adjustments, and that's what we've been forced to do over the last couple of years. So, you know, for me, I think the biggest thing I've learned is you just have to roll with it and do whatever you can to get what you need and just adapt and learn along the way.
Interesting, Elise. I think that's you just captured the challenge for being out there on a regular basis. And I know you deal mostly in facts and reporting, but I am curious about your opinion here because there's a debate, and I've been going on this week, Mullion Haw talking about Brendan Davis and why to me it would have made sense to give him a chance and maybe even before the end of the season take a look at what you have at Brendan Davis as a major leaguer. Nico Hoerner and Brendan Davis were drafted in the same draft in 2018 in the first and second rounds respectively. Why the wait, do you think? Is he ready, and what would we see if we saw Brendan Davis in a major league uniform?
I think that it's just part of the process, and the Cubs obviously know a lot better where he is at than I do in his development, but it just seems like, you know, you want, and they always talk about this, even at, you know, the big league level, you want to set guys up for success. And so whatever that's going to mean for Brendan Davis and the timing of this, and immediately when I think of someone like your top prospect, I know there's excitement around him and you want to see him at the big league level, but in part two, I feel what is the rush basically? Because you want to make sure that when he gets up there, he's ready. You don't want to, I was going to say like ruin or mess with his confidence for lack of a better word, but because confidence is a huge part of this game and he clearly has that right now. And especially with the way he's transitioned in Iowa in the first few games there, to me, it's showing that the process in essence is working because that's what you want. You want each jump to see that player perform well. And I know that, you know, when he did an interview with our Lance Brozdowski, who's gotten to visit some of the lower levels, that's something that Davis talked about, that jump from high A to double A in a short period of time. He had to get used to things, like just little things like the pitching is better. You know, guys are throwing strikes. And I think learning how to transition on that front is now helping him. And as he's around his teammates and having conversations with them, like I know he's close with Chase Strumpf, another one of the Cubs' top prospects, you're seeing, I think, just a ball player develop. Because keep in mind, this is someone who was drafted out of high school. And so I think, you know, to take time and not just develop him mentally but physically is a smart thing to do.
Elise, in closing with you, and David and I really appreciate your time and love your work, and I love working with you
Thank you.
Well.
I love working with you too, Bruce.
When a young man or young woman is listening to you right now and listening to this show, what's the best advice you could give them if they want to get further in the field? They're in college. They're specializing in journalism or in broadcasting. What's the best advice you could give them as far as progressing on in their career?
Yeah, so it's going to sound cliche, and I know that a lot of the time students or aspiring broadcasters, you know, this isn't the answer they want, but it truly is. You know, I believe hard work pays off. And I always say learn everything you can, because especially with the way the industry now is with social media and just for print and, you know, just digital, anything, you don't know what direction your career is going to go in. And so I think the more you can know, the better. And so for me, that was, you know, I don't take for granted my news reporting background. I don't believe I would be the sports reporter I am today without it. And at that time, too, you know, I'm writing, shooting, editing, producing essentially any story that you would see on air for me in local TV. And while at times I didn't enjoy that process because it is a grind, I get it. I went through it. It's all of that put together that's made me who I am. And I think it's made me better along the ways, because I know that students always want, in essence, to hear like a shortcut, like what route can I take to try to get to where I want to be faster? And I don't have an answer for that. I think at times I wish I had it for myself. But I do think it's all about the hard work. And if you're willing to sacrifice and commit to this job, then it will, you know, give back to you, because I just truly believe that the harder you work in this industry, things will pay off. So I know that a lot of times I wanted to look for a different route, or how can I get to, you know, from point A to point B, but there really isn't a way around it. And I don't know, looking back, if that would have been the best thing for me and if it's ideal for students out there, because I truly think it's all about gaining that experience. And that's what I was just doing as I moved up throughout local TV.
Great advice. Thanks, Elise. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, guys.
Great
so
having
much.
You.
Appreciate
Take
it.
Care.
Yep. Elise Menneker from, yeah, it's great, from the Marquee Sports Network, with some great advice for young sports journalists, and also great insight on the Cubs and the Iowa Cubs. Bruce, Brendan Davis on the way. How soon? We'll wait and see, but it probably will be next year, sooner rather than later. And we'll talk about the White Sox when we come back. They have already arrived. So what is next for the White Sox? We will ask James Fegan from The Athletic here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.